Dr. Matthew Smith. The title of his presentation is Factors Associated with Women's Chronic Disease Management, Healthcare Frustrations, Physician Support, and Self-Care Knowledge. And you are at the Department of Health Promotion and Behavior at the University of Georgia College of Public Health. Correct. Welcome.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. So great to see such a full room and so many familiar faces. I'd like to go ahead and just start off talking about, well, first and foremost, some of the partners, some of which whom are in this room that have greatly contributed to this research. And, of course, we have no disclosures. I have to say this out loud. It's probably of no surprise to anybody in this room that there is a rise in chronic conditions here in the United States, and we are living longer periods of time. Oftentimes, Americans are not only getting chronic conditions at younger ages, so therefore they're having multiple comorbidities, but at the same time now living with these comorbidities for longer periods of time. And this is especially true for women who often will outlive their male counterparts. So the effects of living with chronic conditions can really impact multiple different levels. It's not only the individual themselves and their ability to care for themselves, but it's also the caregiver and their ability to serve as a resource effectively for those individuals they're caring for. But also these chronic conditions can influence the healthcare provider's ability to work with these individuals, especially with their chronic conditions and their complex chronic conditions as they acquire more comorbidities. Therefore, we have an emphasis on self-care. And so what we see is that these self-care behaviors that are recommended or that are encouraged draw upon one's physical, social, and healthcare environments to compensate for or delay negative effects or the progression of chronic disease. And it does so in many different ways, by helping these individuals to identify strategies so that they can adopt or institute self-care behaviors. In addition to that, to interact with healthcare providers so that they can obtain those resources, those referrals, those services that they need. And then, of course, to locate those social and community resources so that they can learn about their conditions and learn some of those other types of strategies to better alleviate some of the stressors. We know there are many different frustrations associated with healthcare. Many of these are associated with in-office type factors, such as the patient-physician communication themselves, time spent, perceived support. But we also know that there are a lot of barriers, and these occur not only outside of the healthcare system, but also in people's homes. There are just a wide variety of different barriers to self-care behaviors. And therefore, the conceptual framework, looking at this, and I'll walk through it ever so quickly, shows that these sociodemographics, the age, race, ethnicity, education, marital status, the rurality of the individual, these individuals, it influences and can influence their chronic conditions and perceived health status. Also, it influences and possibly defines some of the support mechanisms that they have available to them for self-care behaviors. These things combined then oftentimes contribute to frustrations with the healthcare interactions, but also the interactions themselves with the healthcare providers, all of which, when combined collectively, can influence these perceived barriers of self-care. And therefore, we have performed a study that looks at the sociodemographics, health indicators, healthcare-related frustrations, and perceptions of support among physicians among these middle-aged and older adult females who've self-reported having one or more chronic conditions. And then the second purpose after doing this, we are also looking at the association of these factors with reporting the need for help learning how to better take care and manage their conditions. And so by performing these statistical analyses, we compared these different characteristics, the frustrations, the physician support, and the patient characteristics, not only by age group of middle-aged and older women, but also by reporting that, yes, they needed help learning more about how to care for their conditions, and those women who did not report needing help to identify or to better care for their conditions. And we also performed logistic regression. So a little bit about the data. Data were collected from over 1,000 middle-aged and older adults who self-reported having one or more chronic conditions. This was the National Council on Aging's Chronic Care Survey in partnership of the Lake Research Partners. This is a nationally representative sample that utilized random digit dialing, and it was conducted nationally but then repeated again in California, but that's outside of the scope of this study. Conducted both in English and Spanish, and the sample was oversampled for Hispanic and Latino participants. The analysis based on the inclusion criteria of being age 44 and older, also being female and also having complete data, yielded a sample of 287 females. So what did we look at? The personal characteristics, again, by age group, race, ethnicity, education, marital status, and rurality of their residents. The health indicators, which was the activity limitations, self-reported, number of medications taken daily, and the number of physician visits per year. The general support perceptions, we asked these women about their perceptions of receiving help and support needed to improve or manage their conditions, but also the use of the internet for this type of support or management. And then healthcare frustrations, these were actually scales. And so these scales, the frustration scale was a 6-item scale. It was then, we looked at each of these items independently, but also summed as a scale, and then also treated them in tertiles because of the frequency distribution so that we could understand a little bit more about how these individuals perceived their frustration or how frustrated they were. Higher scores indicated more perceived frustration with the healthcare system. As with the physician support, this again was a scale of 6 items. We looked at these items independently. We also summed them into a scale, looked at them in tertiles, and higher scores in this scale indicated more perceived physician support. So some people really enjoy data and some people really enjoy text, so I provided both. So I will kind of try to breeze through this as quickly as I can, but a little bit about the sample characteristics of these females. Over a third were age 65 and older. A vast majority, almost 90%, were non-Hispanic white. 40% had a high school education or less. 70% being married. About half living in suburban areas and 25% in rural areas. One-third reported some sort of activity limitation, and whether that was mental, physical, or emotional. That was actually just one question that they either endorsed or did not endorse. 67% reported frequently or always getting the support they needed, and 45% actually relied on the internet for that type of support. On average, these participants reported almost taking 4 medications daily, seeing physicians on average about 3 times each year, and reporting 35% saying that they needed help learning how better to care for their health conditions. Now, again, we compared these characteristics by age group and then again by the dependent variable of needing help caring for their behaviors. And the things to highlight here is based on age group, we see that the older age group was actually had lower education and also relied on the internet less, which is not a very large surprise, I'm sure, to most. And then those individuals who needed help learning how to care for their health also reported having more of those individuals, a larger proportion, were non-white or minority participants, and then also reported having lower rates of education. So when talking about healthcare frustrations, we also compared these by age group and the dependent variable. And so what we saw by comparing these healthcare frustrations by age group is that there was no difference by age. But when we compared it by needing help how to better take care of their health, we saw that there were significant differences for 5 out of the 6 different items. So those individuals who needed help learning more about how to care for their behaviors or how to care for their conditions actually reported wishing the doctor spent more time with them, felt tired of describing the same conditions every time they talked to a physician or went into the healthcare system, wished they had a friend or family member that could accompany them, felt that a doctor did not realize what it was really like at home when they tried to care for their condition, and then they left the hospital oftentimes feeling confused about what to do outside of that clinical setting. And again, that's a very quick representation. So let's talk about the perceived physician support. Again, when comparing by age group, no significant differences by age. However, the only thing that emerged when comparing by the need to help learning how to take better care of their health was that those individuals who perceived needing help also reported being asked significantly less about their ideas about how to take care of their health problems. And I could see why that could possibly happen, and we can talk about that here in a few. And again, here is the data showing this. Now, when looking at all of these factors together, when looking at the sociodemographics, perceived support, when looking at the frustrations, we performed this logistic regression so that we could identify those factors associated with needing help learning how to take better care of their health. And so what we saw was that the individuals needing more care were significantly more likely to be non-white, but significantly less likely to have some college or more education. They were also less likely to have lower levels of frustration, meaning they were more frustrated, and they were significantly less likely to have high perceptions of physician support. So this seems relatively intuitive in many ways. However, when thinking about many of the different implications for this study, we see that a lot of the different health disparities that we see in epidemiology based on race, ethnicity, or minority status, education, persist here. And we also see that the barriers for frustrations and support didn't differ by age, which was actually very interesting because oftentimes we think that older individuals are very much more, they have more chronic conditions, they might be more complex patients, they might have more access to the healthcare system and therefore maybe have more opportunities for frustrations, barriers, more things to manage as their diseases progress. However, we didn't see any of those differences. Rather, we saw them all by the need to understand how to better take care of themselves. And this also held true for those where we didn't see any significant differences based on the proxy measures for disease, based on the number of medications or the number of times that an individual actually went into the physician per year, which is another very interesting type finding. So this highlights the need that we need to examine the differences in the frustrations and perceived support related to these self-care behaviors by condition. Here in this study, because of the frequency or the division of different types of chronic conditions, because we did have cancer, we had diabetes, we had heart disease, we had arthritis, there were so many different types. However, the number did not allow us to stratify. And so that's another investigation, is to try to assess a little bit more about how these frustrations or perceived support would differ, not only by the number of chronic conditions, but actually the chronic condition type. The other thing is it shows and highlights the fact that we need to look at the frustrations and support based on the different types of mechanisms they use, based on the internet, based on having family and friends, based on having these other types of transportation issues or some other types of forms. There are many more studies that need to be done so that we can fully understand these relationships. But the study that we performed has great potential to inform program deliverers, healthcare providers, and some health agencies so that they can provide sources to women that they truly need, that they truly want, and that they truly think are helpful. And hopefully by understanding some of the perceived support, understanding some of the frustrations, we can actually identify programs so that they can learn about self-care behaviors for their chronic conditions outside of the healthcare system. For example, chronic disease self-management, which is a program out of Stanford. There are so many different types of programs that are available, but by understanding a little bit more about the barriers that these women are encountering, the providers, resources that can be identified for them can be much more accurate and useful to them. I think the other thing that's not on this slide is to think about how healthcare reform will play into all of this, and as the actual healthcare system itself starts to change, we're going to have to think about how those frustrations, access, barriers will also change alongside all of those other supports and resources that will hopefully complement. I think that is all. Thank you.
Time for questions.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hey, that was a great talk. Thank you.
Thank you.
I was wondering, did you, were you able to look at income or any sort of...
So, oftentimes they did ask income, and we did not create this survey. Income was asked, however, the level of missing data was very high, especially among the older individuals. So oftentimes we use proxy of education and some other types of things so that we can at least put people on some type of even ground, because a lot of times we educate our seniors not to provide that type of financial income, and therefore it's a lot of missing data in a lot of the surveys we do.
This is a subjective versus objective question. Do you think that older people can be in the same doctor-patient interaction but have different expectations, so their satisfaction, I mean, that you could have objectively something that might be more frustrating, but they would be less frustrated because they have a different set of expectations?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I think that maybe if you've had multiple chronic conditions or a chronic condition for longer periods of time and you've been in the system a lot longer, you're probably a little more tolerant, but maybe a lot more frustrated. Who's to say? And so I think it could go either way. But yes, I think it's very individualistic, and I think that's why we need to do further investigation to kind of tease out some of these relationships and really start to stratify a little bit about who they are and why these frustrations might exist for different purposes. Because those older adults might be presenting with different conditions than their younger counterparts.
Do you have any information on how long they have those
chronic conditions? Unfortunately, no. But to be included in the study, they just had to report having been diagnosed with one or more chronic conditions. So that was an inclusion. That was unfortunately not asked. And again, it was a lot of chronic conditions.
Compartmentalizing people into sort of an integrative model. So I had just wondered what you think we might gain in terms of developing programs or things through that.
By either looking at the conditions or looking...
Well, that was one of your third points. So
right, okay,
why
yeah.
Why do you emphasize that?
Well, for example, and some of the other work that we're doing, like, for example, people who have diabetes, and depending on how frequently they're coming into the healthcare system, whether or not they're needing advanced things like dialysis, et cetera, their interactions might actually be quite different than somebody who has cancer or heart disease and maybe aren't necessarily coming in as frequently or going, conversely, very intense or very honed in, I guess.
So
very
it may be really, rather than condition, just how often you have to go and sort of how complex or, you know, types of things. So are you going to look at that? Sort of the because sometimes managing a very complex condition and something that's more long-term, as Marcia was saying, you know, you get to sort of be adaptive. You know, you kind of adapt to what, how complex it is versus when you're talking about cancer treatment, for example, like breast cancer, can be short-term intense, but women find that much more frustrating, actually, in the
right.
experiences they have compared, I would think.
Well, it's all very new and much of a learning curve. I mean, you come into this healthcare setting and you have all of these different appointments and a very high, like you said, intensity of care that's needed. So stretched over having more experience or exposure to the system might change, but also if you're outside of the, if you have other types of barriers outside of the healthcare, for example, transportation or no other types of support or any other types of access to resources, like if you're in a rural area and you don't necessarily have all of the programs right at your disposal, that might also help to contribute.
But I think some of the work Marge has done on perceptions of control and some of those things with condition might be like more important than actually the
condition
itself.
What's important to note is that this was an NCOA survey, so it had all the rigor of a national survey, but it was designed to really point out frustrations and concerns in the healthcare setting. So it didn't have all those variables that social scientists would want to have.
Well, and I was just saying, as you continue to do work and sort of dig a bit deeper, I think all those things with perception control that we're talking about here would really be very, very valuable. This is a great start, though. I think it conceptualized sort of frustrations.
Thank you. I'm going to sit down now.
Okay. Nice.
Thank you. I had kind of a general question for all of the speakers in terms of thinking about implications of the findings. My background is in social support networks, so particularly in the friend-to-friend study, are there explorations going into kind of looking at anything related to the larger network or peer network associated with these women?
I think the whole reason about friend-to-friend is it really was that peer network. And so I think, again, the reason why it's an art tip is that we know that social support is not just information alone, but it's going there, hearing the information, being there, seeing the person at the table say, I think I'll commit. So you're right, social networks are incredibly important, I think, for these preventive behaviors.
So it was just built in already.
Right, that was
so,
part of what made it an evidence-based program was that it had the social support concept.
I see, yeah.
Well, and I think friend to friend, you not only committed to go to the screening, but also to tell a friend.
Yes.
And so that was part of that network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you NCOA, so limited.
Unfortunately, there were some of those support mechanisms that could, like, for example, marital status, which could be considered a support, but they didn't really ask as much about, you know, number of kids or getting information from family, friends, versus some of those other things like government websites, internet-based programs, etc.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Dr. Miller, any comments?
Well, I haven't, in this study, we really haven't, didn't think a lot about kind of social supports. I do think, as was illustrated, particularly in kind of Marsha's work, kind of understanding, in a somewhat related fashion, perhaps the role of like kind of personal experiences or family experience and how that influences. If you're in a family and both grandfathers died of heart disease or what, does that kind of family experience somehow influence your use of preventive care?
Yeah.
Going back to the a couple of studies that were in the gerontologist, Calasani study basically suggested that some of these kinds of personal experiences of say, an illness or acute illness could, in fact, change one's general use of health services. So I think there's plenty of work to do in that area also, as well as with social support, kind of understanding those personal and family experiences and how they shape service use.
Great point. I hadn't even been thinking of it that way. So, any other questions? No?
Here's my question. What is unique about what we said for women? I mean, here we are at the women's thing. We all have studies that have women as a focus, but what does it say about women's health per se or anything? Could these studies be exactly the same, except not perhaps for mammograms, if we had men? So what makes this unique about what we've learned through either research or practice about women and women's health?
No, that's not so loud,
actually. Yeah. Well, I mean, for one, the friend-to-friend, I can't really see that for men. Everybody's laughing. Man-to-man.
Well, I think, and I shouldn't confess, but I will confess, perhaps, that and I will speak for any of my co-authors, but we did back in a little to the gender differences, right? And we're a little puzzled by that. And I think what it says to me is not specific to women, but very much, how men and women use health services and how they use health services, I think, changes over time and the messages that they're responsive to. So if you think about the testing for HIV/AIDS that's out there now, I mean, I think better understanding, like, kind of what... I mean, we're doing that, but continued understanding about differences by gender in perceptions and use of health services and how to provide information that women and men would be receptive to, whether that's through peers or other mechanisms, is useful. So,
I'm just reminded of a campaign that I see on bus shelters in Washington, D.C. that ARC, I believe, is running right now. Directed towards men, it's very exciting, like real men wear gowns.
And 50,000 men die of stubbornness every year, right?
But I think that also plays, by understanding these women's perceptions of breast
frustrations or support that might actually translate, because oftentimes in the household, especially among these married females, we know that the females are actually influencing the male screening and healthcare interactions, and therefore, if they're being frustrated and they're not feeling supported, that might actually change what they're having their husbands.
Yeah, which we didn't hear about caregiving in the session today.
Mm-hmm. That's what I want to know about caregiving, because so many of the women that I'm working with do so much caregiving, whether they're grandparents raising grandchildren or some other permutation, which strongly affects how they interact with the healthcare system.
Well, I wondered that with the self-care definition, if you would count self-care as someone who not only cares for themselves, but also has family members help them care for themselves. Would you define that as self-care, or self-care is only when you take care of yourself?
Oh, no, I think that you can't necessarily isolate it. Self-care behaviors, naturally by the name, would be things that you're doing for yourself, but then again, by knowing and understanding that there are resources available to you and then utilizing them, I find that to be a self-care behavior. So
anything non-medical.
Contribution, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have a question to Camilla.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you that gender is part of the predisposing factor of the Anderson model.
Right.
But would it be possible to recategorize the gender into the means rather than predisposing factors? I know it's classic predisposing factors of those in the model, but we've seen, you know, there has been some gender-specific relationships with disabilities. So can we move that component to the need factors?
Well, I think it's a good question, and I think in the context of the Anderson model, if you go back and when he talks about gender in his model, he uses the phrase of a kind of a biological imperative. But in some sense, there are health-related differences between women and men. The example that he gives in like older studies might be like reproductive health issues, but the age very much he also talks about as kind of this imperative. As one ages, you're likely to have more chronic conditions, so you're predisposed because of these kinds of need characteristics. So there's clearly a relationship that's not articulated or kind of laid out in the model about the relationship between, one could imagine, it might even apply to some other predisposing characteristics, but kind of this interaction or relation between some of these predisposing characteristics and then particular needs.
Any other thoughts, comments, questions?
We'll put some plugs in for aging and public health section.
Okay, yes, big day is in the aging and public health section at 4:30 this afternoon. Don't have the room number if anyone has. 258 and 260. We are having our distinguished award ceremony. And it will be a full session of about an hour and a half of recognition, including the Aetna Award. So I encourage you all to attend. And then after that, we have our social hour, which is also distinguished by our auction that we have, a silent and live auction, a raffle, food and drinks, and great company. So I welcome you and hope you all will consider coming. Okay.
And if you don't have a section, please join. If you have a section already, you can join us as a secondary section.
Right. Right.
Very good.
Right. Put it right.
All right. Thank you.